keep your wits together.
That's the safest way to keep it.
These are critical times.
These are critical times, and that's why we are a climate silence-free zone here on the Green Front. Welcome to the show. Very excited to have a friend of the program, Brad Johnson, back to talk about climate silence and the debates and what was not said, the C word, for hundreds and hundreds of minutes. It's just unbelievable. We're not going to let it go. We're going to be discussing that in our first segment with D.R. Tucker, of course, a great friend to the show, my favorite co-host, and Republican who voted for Obama this time around. In the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with the California League of Conservation Voters about some very important issues on the California ballot. We'll be checking in with David Allgood for that. Also be talking about the attacks on AB 32 and also Prop 32 on the California ballot. Very misleading. Going to give you all the facts on that, so stay with us for the entire show. I know you'll enjoy it. Very pleased to welcome back to the program Brad Johnson. He is the campaign manager of one of our favorite groups, Forecast the Facts, and also now Climate Silence. Hey, Brad.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, DR.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, weren't they prescient, Brad and friends, by starting Climate Silence? How did you know, Brad, that they were not going to even bring it up during any of the debates? Was that predictable? Are you surprised? We're all disappointed, pretty much disgusted, I would say, now that we know it never came up. It almost came up, but it didn't.
Well, and I think that piece by the Brad blog, which is, I like to think that there's a little conspiracy of Brad's out there, really, you know, gave a great, you know, really described exactly what was going on. And I mean, I think it's important to recognize that the presidential candidates really did talk about climate change. They talked about accelerating it. They, both of them competed, to, you know, sound like the more pro-coal, pro-oil, pro-gas, pro-fossil fuel candidate. And I think that's really important for all of your listeners to know that when you're talking about energy policy, you're talking about climate change. And similarly, when you're talking about fiscal or financial policy, if you're talking about national security, you're talking about climate change. And as Chris Hayes pointed out, what we heard in the debates is it would be like if we talked about smoking without talking about cancer. And that's really important for everybody to know. Unfortunately, what we, you know, didn't hear was predictable, which is why we launched Climate Silence beforehand. And it reflected a decision by the candidates, by their campaigns, to essentially censor the reality of global warming from the way that they talk about what's important to the American people. But the only thing I'd say is, like, we were hopeful that, you know, they would change their minds when they were reminded of their responsibility as, you know, the leader of the American nation.
Brad, I had mentioned to Betsy the other day the issue where Candy Crowley of CNN, one of the moderators of the debate, mentioned that she had a question ready to go for, as she put it, the climate change people. And I mentioned my theory that was sort of a coded way for Candy Crowley to indicate that there were certain questions she was uncomfortable with addressing and other moderators were uncomfortable with addressing because they were afraid of the conservative media jumping down their throats. It was noted that the conservative media basically launched this effort to sort of smear in advance Martha Raddatz of ABC News and Bob Schieffer as somehow being slanted to the left. And I think that the issue that has to be focused on for a lot of people is the role that the fossil-fueled conservative media plays in sort of intimidating the moderators into climate silence. We know the reasons for the climate silence on the part of the campaigns, but when the moderators don't talk about it, when they've talked about it in previous years, does it not indicate that this sort of campaign of fear by the right wing is responsible for the fact that the moderators never discuss these issues?
Well, I mean, I think that campaign of fear certainly plays a role. I think we also have to recognize that campaign of fear works on people at the grassroots level as well. One of the things that we get when we, send out emails pointing out that our presidential candidates aren't talking about the greatest threat to, civilization in this election is we get people saying, well, but I'm so afraid of the Tea Party. And, you know, maybe we shouldn't talk about it during an election cycle. And so, you know, it's certainly, it's certainly not just the moderators, and, you know, that fear influence has an influence on them. Bob Schaefer also talked about, he basically said that he had a binder full of climate change questions that he didn't get to. He literally did say he had a binder that had climate change questions in it. I'm actually not making that up. And so that there's that fear influence. There's also what, you know, there's that the important thing to understand about climate silence is that it's a self-reinforcing silence. It requires everybody to play a role. In other words, it's the presidential candidates not talking about climate change. It's the corporate media not talking about climate change. It's the moderators. But it's also the American people. It's also environmental groups not challenging the candidates to speak out. And it's also when we're talking with our our friends and family, it's really hard, and I think we need to recognize that it's genuinely difficult to confront how big and genuinely frightening the consequences of our dependence on fossil fuels is, and it's really hard for us to understand how to move forward. But I think that the way to do that is to be willing to talk about it, and that's like the one of the most important first steps for all of us, and obviously for the president and for the moderators, but also for us. And that's why I'm so glad that you're doing this show like every week, and not being afraid to speak out.
Oh, no, contraire. I mean, it's unbelievable to us and many, I'm sure, that after the incredible, record summer of weather and intense heat, which continued through September, as I just said on the Green News Report, that there's not one mention in the debates. And what do you say, Brad, to those who feel that, well, Obama does get it, it's a non-starter issue, so he's going to be quiet about it during the election because it could turn some voters off, but he'll do the right thing in the next administration, especially in light of the fact that we have 3 to 5 years to whatever extent we can, turn the ship around, slow the tide, and these are critical years here. Without it being mentioned, how hopeful can we be that it's going to be a top priority if Obama wins, which we certainly have to hope and pray he will, because the alternative is, or as I say, we may be toast, but we'll be burnt toast with Romney.
I mean, unfortunately, that just doesn't, I can see how that makes psychological sense. It just doesn't make any logical sense. If you believe that the politics of the United States are such that it's not politically possible for the president running for re-election, who has a real record of accomplishment trying to fight climate change, that he's not willing or able to talk about it. The idea that once he's in office, he's going to be able to affect change with the same politicians in the House and Senate and, the same lobbyists and the same corporate power, that doesn't make any sense. That's not how our system works. Our system works that, the elections are both a reflection and also shape what are the issues that can be taken on. And if climate change was something that could be, fixed by, a behind-the-scenes executive order, then sure. Maybe not talking about it would be fine, but we all know that the reality is that this isn't some environmental issue in some kind of boutique sense that there's only a few people who care about a fish somewhere. This is an environmental issue in the truest sense, that it is a planetary environmental issue. It's the entire planet. There's no escape from climate change, and it's the economic issue. It's the national security issue. It's the agricultural policy issue. And that means that it's not something that, somebody, even the president, can handle behind the scenes. It's something that actually will require, a serious national debate on. And that means that, if it's not, then the best time for national debate on issues of grave importance are elections. So the idea that Obama's got this in hand because it doesn't make any sense. We live in a democracy, and that President Obama has said it. He has said this in 2007. He said that the number one thing that is needed is a sense of urgency among the American people. Because leaders follow, our politicians follow, and he's, this isn't my analysis, it's his. Mm-hmm. So that's what we need. I mean, it's like it, the idea that millions of Americans who are concerned about climate change, that the way that they're going to get the president to take action is by not talking about it, like, it just doesn't make any sense.
And it does perpetuate itself. So, you know, people don't hear about it in the debates. They don't hear about it in mainstream media. They too easily will think, I don't have to concern myself with it. And then there's no public demand, you know, mandate for greener policies, programs, and legislation and action on climate change. And, you know, Candy Crowley's comment feeds right into that notion of dismissing us as somehow, you know, marginalized and in our interests, you know, our concerns. Like, climate change is just a pet concern of the fringe, you know, environmental movement. And that was so patronizing and condescending, and you know, she was throwing us a bone. That angered me more than if she hadn't said anything at all. I don't know if you two had that same reaction.
Just briefly, I think she was being unintentionally revealing there. I don't think that she was trying to be patronizing. It came out that way because she was trying. I think she knows in her heart that, you know, climate change people are just people. And she's trying to not, you know, she was trying to laugh off her failure.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I don't think it was intentional. I just think it reflects, though, that, you know, subtle feeling that it's an issue of concern to some, a special interest. And it's a very special interest, in fact. And what do you make of the fact that, you know, President Obama, in that Rolling Stone interview not so long ago, said climate change is going to be a big issue going forward in the election, and it has so not been. Is he just waiting for there to be more public outcry that just never materialized? Is that what he expected and didn't see, because he has been so disappointing? Other than, you know, the comment in his acceptance speech at the Democratic Convention where he said it's not a hoax, and he did get a, you know, huge round of applause.
Well, and let's be clear, though, the paragraph preceding that was talking about increasing oil production and talking, and, you know, in a 100-year supply of natural gas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the two statements are logically incompatible. And that's, I think, but you hit upon it. Like, we can't expect the president or any president to do the work of the American, you know, of a movement. And I think that's been a mistake that a lot of us have made, because, you know, President Obama, like, you know, ran a genuinely inspirational campaign in 2008. And but this idea that, you know, anybody who's in the White House, their job is essentially to, you know, maintain the institutions of the United States, not to transform them. And that energy has to come from the American people. And, you know, one challenge we have is we have to figure out how to help our, you know, brothers and sisters in the labor movement, in who care about immigration, who care about, you know, women's rights, to recognize that climate change fundamentally isn't an environmental issue in what I think we have this traditional sense. That what it is it is a human rights issue, and it is the human rights issue, because, you know, if we continue to on the path that we're on of disrupting and degrading the climate, we will, you know, we are destroying the underpinnings of civilization. And that is, you know, a fundamental, you know, that is, like, there is no human right greater than, like, the ability to, like, have civilization. And that's really what we need to, like, recognize, that this is, like, you know, the American people and the world came together and recognized that nuclear war wasn't just, like, a quote-unquote national security or a foreign policy issue, but was a threat to human civilization.
Mm.
And we need to, you know, be willing to, you know, recognize that that's what climate change is. And but the first thing to start, you know, in other words, it can't just be environmental groups and environmental organizations and quote-unquote environmentalists who care about this, but that's certainly where we need to start.
It's interesting you talk about nuclear annihilation. Right before the fabulous Frontline documentary last night on climate doubt, there was a special on the Cuban Missile Crisis, and they were talking about how we came so close to the brink, and so many of the quotes reminded me of what we in the climate movement talk about happening. And while it may not be as easy as avoiding a push of a button and things building up to, you know, critical mass on one particular day, You know, we are talking about the future of civilization and unborn generations to come, et cetera, and yet you'd never know it. It wasn't just the silence during the debates, but I watched, I flip around a lot, and even on MSNBC, I didn't hear anybody in the commentary, the post game analysis, say, why weren't there conversations or questions about climate change? So we know we still have a long way to go. How has it been at Climate Silence during this time where your message is really resonating?
Well, I think it's been really amazing to see how many people and organizations have really come and recognized how important it is that our presidential candidates are not really talking about climate change and certainly haven't presented a plan to address the carbon pollution. We started with working the Forecast the Facts, started working with Friends of the Earth, and then Public Citizen joined in, and National Wildlife Federation at 350.org, and we're seeing, Sierra Club groups, and I really actually want to say that the Energy Action Coalition, which is the youth climate movement, have been leading the charge on this. Right now in Massachusetts, there is a week-long 24/7 vigil to end climate silence that's challenging the presidential candidates as well as Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown to seriously address climate. You have protesters blockading the Obama-approved Keystone XL southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline in Texas right now. So there's this, and you're seeing, more and more members of the national media recognizing that, that this is a fundamental crisis for the American politic. So I think it's really inspiring seeing, it would be great if we were seeing leadership in action at this moment, but you're right. Like right now what we're seeing is we're seeing essentially the effect of the insurgents, or the whatever the word is, of the Tea Party in 2010, the Koch-funded Tea Party, and it's always best if we fight harder and faster and stronger, but it's really inspiring seeing the energy of people waking up and just breaking the climate silence.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Tea Party and sort of right wing activism, and I think one of the issues is that I think one of the things that sort of allows for climate silence is that the fact that is that climate has to be placed at the top of progressive policy concerns, because if you look at right wing policy concerns, there are four policy concerns that are equally number one: denial of the problem, dependence on fossil fuels, tax cuts for the top 2%, and war. So those are the things that drive the right wing, and that's the stuff that the right wing is obsessed with. But specifically in terms of energy policy, I think we have to get to a point where climate is the number one concern. Climate action, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, that is the concern for progressives, but beyond any other concern, so that you fight the right wing agenda concerns, which are again denial and oil, with equal force. And do you think we can get to that point where the number one motivation, the number one policy goal for progressives is in fact climate action, to counteract the number one policy goal or the top policy goals of climate denial for the right?
I really think that's possible. And one thing, one reason is, for example, Chris Hayes, and seeing how he's recognized this. Here's someone who he's not a traditional environmentalist, but he's a deeply thoughtful progressive. And there's people like John Fullerton, who had been an investment banker, who started investigating, what is fundamentally driving global politics, and realized that it's basically this carbon bubble that threatens civilization, and that a lot of his work is what underlies the Bill McKibben's Rolling Stone article and the 350 Do the Math tour, which everybody should go out and sign up and go see and talk about, and probably invite Obama and Romney and Paul Ryan and Joe Biden to go see. The way for progressives to understand that this is a fundamental issue is to recognize that that is the war we're fighting. B, to recognize that everything that everybody does, when we're working to improve equality, when we're working on, tax equality, when we're working to improve women's rights across the world, and when we're improving, when we're working on civil rights, that is the solution path to climate change. Like it is, but Chris Hayes, a really excellent point that he made about a week ago was that the kind of the last time that we faced an economic challenge of this nature, like the economics at stake right now, that you have the fossil fuel industry, the value of their assets, these trillions of dollars of carbon that are incompatible with civilization. The last time that we faced this was, in the pre-Civil War, the economic value of slavery to the South was tremendous. And we had to, we have to hope against hope that we can, win this fight for our future without going down that bloody path. So we need to, and the only way we can do that is by confronting the fact that carbon. That is the wealth, the carbon wealth, is actually threatening humanity, and it's a really big challenge, and it's a really powerful thing. But this isn't just kind of like, and I think that's what allows this to expand into kind of the fundamental progressive movement that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, Chris Hayes did a wonderful job he did it last weekend, a three-part series on the climate silence. And we've been emailing with him, trying to see if he can go to bat to convince MSNBC to have a green show on that focuses on climate change, since he gets it. He's one of the few in mainstream, albeit liberal media, who gets it. So far, silence from MSNBC, but we're working on that, because why not a green talk show, as I've been saying for 15 years now, on mainstream media outlets, because there's not just one topic under that, and even under climate change alone, there's so much to talk about, as you know, just from a political, scientific, economic, lifestyle point of view.
Right. Anyway. Well, I mean, I would just say that, it doesn't really I don't think it really matters what the label is, as long as, as long as people are.
Yeah, I guess my point is just that if we don't have even one designated program anywhere in, radio or television, how are we going to hope to, address? We need a channel for education. We need a place where people can talk about what we're up against and the solutions. And right now there is no such place, again, in mainstream media. This has been my battle cry for a long time now, but that seems to be, to me, from my perspective, a missing piece. I want to go back to the debate just for a minute, because let's not let Jim Lehrer off the hook. I mean, he got a lot of criticism for a lot of good reasons, but I still, again, did not hear anyone, not that it didn't happen, but anyone really criticizing him other than outside climate circles and green circles, for ignoring 160,000 signatures.
Well, I think I noted before that 160,000 signatures versus the levels of intimidation that he would get from the right wing. I think he basically said, what, I'm going to ignore those 160,000 signatures. I think that sort of goes to the fundamental problem of how do you, and the problem that Betsy is talking about, how do you get people in the press who can report these things and talk about these things and discuss these things without fear of intimidation from the right wing, without fear of intimidation from the fossil fuel industry. One person with courage makes the majority, as the old saying goes, and that's something that the mainstream media needs to realize once again.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. What Tucker's saying is that there is, it's exactly right. It's there is a system that we are fighting against, and it is, so we're fighting a systemic challenge, but the way that we can win is through one person at a time, and the willingness for each person to ask themselves, well, what is it that I can do? What is my power to make a difference? And it doesn't matter whether you're a journalist or a leader or a mother, there's always going to be something that you can do that helps transform the world around you in a more positive way.
And speaking of mothers, climate parents did get a little bit of press during the debates. They were protesting outside the side of the debates, demanding that there be talk about climate change, and they did get some coverage in the local papers. So not entirely a wasted effort on the part of climate activists.
Never wasted. Well, right, and exactly. I think that's the point. This is that, you know, it's good to get press. It's, like, good to get validation. It's good to, it's a measure of success when people in the Obama campaign email me, privately and say, like, look at, here are clips of Obama mentioning climate change on the stump. Like, but what fundamentally matters to me, and I think it should fundamentally matter to each person, is, not whether they're getting press, but, like, are they speaking out? Are they taking saying, okay, this is a moral challenge. What am I doing as a human being, as a citizen, as an American, with the responsibility and privileges that come with all that? What am I doing personally as a parent to, seek justice and to fight in some sense the sin of global warming, of carbon pollution. None of us are going to be able to, none of us are saints, and none of us are going to be able to do all that is possible, but we can all take action, and we can all say, I am going to believe that there is a better path, and I am going to work towards that path. And it's good to get the validation from, the corporate media and from the local press, but the most important thing is what's in our hearts.
Now, what's ahead for Climate Silence? We're less than 2 weeks away from the election. I hope you're not going to be disbanding. Maybe just gearing up?
For example, one thing is we're going to continue fighting. There are 2 weeks. On Friday, President Obama is sitting down with MTV News and being interviewed by, asking questions, getting questions asked from young people. And so we're certainly hopeful that that will be a chance for him to talk about climate change. We're hoping that Hurricane Sandy moves off to, moves off into the ocean, but we're going to also speak out about how, the very real impact, that the presidential candidates can see the very real impacts of our carbon-fueled weather, our poisoned weather, on our brothers and sisters in the Caribbean and quite possibly all up and down the East Coast. And we're going to continue to speak out about the carbon-fueled drought. We're going to continue to speak out against the relentless barrage of coal and oil and gas ads in all of the swing states. And we're also going to continue this fight after the election. We're going to say, okay, we're going to look for ways for people to mobilize and say, what can you do to break the climate silence? And I think we're going to go back to the reason that our organization is called Forecast the Facts is local weather forecasters on the television are so afraid of talking about climate change. They're either global warming deniers or they're told by their producers that they're not allowed to talk about global warming, or they're afraid to talk about it and to admit that we have responsibility for our weather now. And we're going to, mobilize people for that. I think our goal is to just continue saying that people in power, whether they're politicians or the media or corporations, should be held accountable. And we're also going to say that we're also going to look for ways to help give voice to everyone else.
All right. Thank you. We're just about out of time, Brad. I really appreciate the great work you're doing there at Forecast the Facts and Climate Silence and for taking time out to be on the Green Front today.
Thanks.
Oh,
thank you so much.
And thank you. And so I'll just, you know, please go to climatesilence.org and sign up.
Will do. And continuing to not be silent about climate silence, I'm telling everyone I know that there's this group out there that is, you know, really a watchdog and keeping track along with us here at the Green Front. Those of us who are obsessed with this issue will not let it go. No way, no how. Even if we wanted to, we couldn't. And sometimes, believe me, I wish I could. Sometimes it's difficult knowing what we know.
Yes, but it's also what makes it worth fighting.
That's right. Okay, thanks so much again, Brad Johnson with Climate Silence. When we come back, we'll be checking in with David Allgood of the California League of Conservation Voters. Lots of very important issues on the California ballot, and many say as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. So lots of reasons to pay attention. Thanks also to...